The geezer? Stavro asks over the comm. Hold, I tell him. You forget. Lorne pulls his own datapad from his pocket. I could have my fleet destroy yours, boy. Not before mine takes the sovereigns. But she would know then where House Arco stands. She would know that you tricked me, that my house is not part of this. Then do it, I tell Lorne. Launch your ships if you think my cause evil. Put me down if you think me a monster. I step forward, close to him. But you know the heart that beats inside. Choose me, or choose that darkness. I nod down the hill of the forest garden to where we enter the place. 12 obsidian praetorians file through the same glass door we used. Huge men and women in black and purple armor, skull helms. Only one stained. This one thinner than the others, like a winter asp standing on its tail. His armor is white and splashed with colors like blood. They are less than 50 meters away. With them, shorter than the rest, but more glorious, is the Protean knight in her golden gear. Her razor shimmers with the colors of a nebula, and her armor writhes like the waves that batter the white walls of Lorne's island. Azure peers up to the night sky, where she sees my ambush unfolding. She lets her helmet recoil into her armor.
"And then the traitors were two," she calls. "House Arcos has embraced treason as well. Lorne, you stand with the lions?"
"The House Arcos stands apart,"
Lorne calls back.
"Apart?"
Quinn's killer frowns and tilts her head so I can see the dueling scars on the right of her neck. Her cat eyes scan the woods for signs of a trap.
"There is no such thing."
"I was as deceived as you, Azure," Lorne calls. "Darrow knew you were here. I don't know how, but I am not your enemy. I want only to be left alone."
"That was never a choice," Azure calls. "You know this better than anyone. You are with us, or you are against us, Lorne."
"Azure, no. I have no part in this, none."
"The strong always have a part," I mutter.
"I will not have my hand forced."
He cuts me with a wrathful stare.
"I have no quarrel with either of you. I am a man of peace now."
"Then why is your blade out?"
Azure smiles.
"Do what you know. Come down and speak, teacher. We should not shout. Isn't that what you said when I used to raise my voice in anger?"
She eyes the griffin that now growls beside us. It's larger than 4 horses. I wonder what those talons would do against their armor. "Her ships are lost," I whisper to Lorne. "What would Octavia have her do?"
"Kill us. For spite."
I lower my voice.
"Then you have no choice." "So it would seem."
Azure watches me kneel to the ground and gather dirt in my hand. She has studied me. She knows what this must mean. And she must wonder what plan I have. Why I've come alone. If I really set an ambush in the sky, wouldn't I set one below? I'm about to shout something to her when another figure steps through the gate to join Azure. He's rangy, darker skin than mine, a smirk on his bored, patrician face. Tactus. All in Praetorian armor. He slinks forward, a shadow of purple and black, eyeing the sky apprehensively before beaming me a lopsided smile.
"Speaking of traitors," I shout. "Hello, Tactus. Pretty armor."
"Reaper, my goodman,"
Tactus bellows, and throws up the crooks.
"Where's Severo?"
He leans in to tell Azure something. Azure straightens and looks around again at the trees. Her men condense in defensive formation. Tactus warns them of my tricks. They know something is awry. Their aegis shields activate, glittering over arms. Lorne closes his eyes and lifts his left hand into the air, feeling the whipping of the storm's wind.
"Leave Aja to me. You'll have better luck against the Stained." "No, they're all mine."
"Severo, rise!"
The howlers emerge from the sea beyond the castle. Water drips from them as they fly silently over the 100-meter-high walls, armor glistening like black beetle shells. A golden line has been painted on each breastplate. The gold winks as lightning flashes. They land silently around us.
"My storm sons," I say to Lorne.
20 new recruits have come from the families of the Howlers and the Telemannus ranks. Severo held triads. I hear it was a bloody bit of fun. Snakes, alcohol, and mushrooms were involved. That's all they let me know.
"Goblin, why are you always hiding?"
Tactus calls. His voice is all jest, but he looks to the sky anxiously again.
"Least it's better than a horse's belly this time."
Severo pulls out his skinning knife, the one he used to take scalps with Harpy years ago. It's a curved customer. He taps it on his groin and points to Tactus. His eyes flick to Aja.
"You killed a howler, Aja," he says. "Wrong play."
As I expected, the appearance of the howlers reassures Aja and Tactus. This makes sense to them. I had soldiers hidden.
Now I do not. A battle to the death. Honor, pride, one force against another.
The obsidian Praetorians begin to keen their terrible throat song. All those men want is the glorious end, to join their relatives in the laughing halls of Valhalla with their blades in hand. They step forward on Aja's command, the deadliest men and women in the solar system, a Stained among them. And I take a page from Evie's book. Ensuring Aja is clear, I detonate the landmine spikes I dropped on the ground as Lorne and I strolled into this forest. Only Tactus is quick enough. He grabs Aja from behind and jerks her back hard, so hard in the low grav that both of them tumble in through the door just as the first explosion rips the salt air. The explosions are tiered. First comes a concussion that disables pulse shields and scatters the Praetorians into the air. Then comes a grav pit, which pulls them back toward the source of the explosion like a vacuum collecting flies. And then comes the third, pure kinetics, to destroy armor and bone and flesh, blowing the warriors outward into the air, scattering their pieces in the low gravity like breath scatters the seeds of a dandelion. Limbs float gently down. Blood beads and spatters the ground. The explosion breaks the bubble roof overhead, and rain again drifts down on the garden to extinguish the fires and thin the blood that leaks into the 2 dozen bomb craters. Only 3 Praetorians survive. They're in poor shape. "Do not let her escape!" Roke's voice sears my ears. He watches my holofeed from the ships above. My howlers have not yet moved. Lorne's furious with me, saying something about honor.
"What?"
I sneer.
"You think I fight fair?"
"Darrow!" Several hisses as I wait. "Darrow!"
"Hold! She's getting away!"
Roke's voice frightens me. It drips with spite I didn't know he had.
"Darrow!"
I growl at him to pay attention to his part of the battle.
"Darrow!"
Severo begs.
"Long enough!"
Lorne watches, perhaps beginning to understand. I snap my fingers.
"Hunt!"
The howlers surge forward like loosed wolves to finish what the bomb started. They dispatch the remaining Praetorians. Severo shouts Tactus's name amid the howling as they tear into the castle searching for him and Aja.
"Darrow, what are you playing at?"
Roke asks me over the comm. I let the hollow of his face appear in the corner of my helmet's HUD display. His jaw muscles flicker.
"If Quinn's killer escapes..."
"Lock that up," I tell Roke, as I see reports of one of our torch ships taking massive damage. He's distracted.
Men are dying up there. Focus on your own job.
I shut off the link. Harpy's image appears on my display.
Seahorse is under.
Good. And Tactus?
No sign.
Copy. I close the connection.
Aja spooked into the sea, but no sign of Tactus.
Severo says to me several minutes later, as the howlers scour the inside of the castle, going room to room.
He's hiding. Unless he teleported.
He spits at that bit of science fiction.
Ask the geezer where they are.
A dark worry slithers into my brain. I turn to Lorne. What would Loon have them do if they could not kill you and me? If she thought someone expendable, what would she order them to do? He stands there for a moment in the rain. Then his face goes pale.
The children.
Arcos pushes past me, running through the bomb's carnage to the shattered glass door.
They're going to kill my grandchildren,
he shouts back.
Where are the children?
I ask Severo.
What children? We found none.
Cursing, I chase Arcos.
I hid them,
he says over his shoulder to me as he sprints down the castle's hall. He's fast for an old man, but the gravity slows us till we start using our hands on the walls and ceiling, using grav boots to take the long halls. We launch around corner after corner, and when he touches the head off a stone griffin and a steel wall falls away to reveal a hidden passage, I smell blood. Two corpses lie on the other side of the passage, one grey, one obsidian. I push past Arcos and fly ahead, pulling myself down a series of stairs via handholds in the ceiling, till I find myself before two doors. I open one. Just the storeroom. I open another, and let my razor slither into my hand.
Tactus, I say slowly.
His back is to me. Three obsidian bodies lie around him, their blood making a pool about his shoes. His razor coils in his hand, hardening as he stands with his head lowered in a room of children and women. Blood slithers down the mercurial blade. When I came, Arcos hid the children from me here. Some gold, some silver, some pink and brown. Tactus could kill half of them with a lazy swing of his razor before we reach them.
Tactus,
remember your brothers, I say to him, looking at the children.
My brothers are shits.
He laughs coarsely, voice sounding strange.
Said I should get out of your shadow. Mother calls me the Mighty Servant. Did you know that?
Children sob in the corner. One buries her face in her mother's lap. The women are not armed. These are not warriors like Victra and Mustang. A brown nursemaid covers a gold child's eyes. I hear Arcos in the tunnel behind me.
Loon's orders are wrong, I say to Tactus.
She asked me if I could fill your place, Reaper,
Tactus says quietly.
Said she didn't think I could. Said I was so long in your shadow that she didn't know if I would ever be more than an echo of you. I told her I could do anything you could do.
Tactus, she's evil.
Is she?
He spits blood on the ground, still not facing me.
They say the same thing about you. They wonder who you think you are to do what you do. To challenge the men and women you challenge. They wonder what right you have.
We all have a right to challenge. That's the point.
The point? Was there a point? He asks. I was never told. You took me for granted. Never telling me anything.
Just as I'm doing with Roke.
Always whispering with others, dismissing me like I'm a fool. You're just like her.
Your mother. He says nothing. Arcos edges in beside me. I put a hand out to stop him.
Would you kill them if Augustus told you to?
Tactus asks me, turning slightly. No, I say. I'd rather die.
I didn't think so. She was right. I am the mighty servant.
I open my hands to him. I don't know what I'm to do now, Tactus.
That's a first.
He laughs bitterly, voice slurring slightly. Hardly. I didn't know what to do when I whipped you, I say. At the Institute. I didn't want to lose you from my army because of your talents. But I couldn't not punish you.
Talents, talents, talents. Then that's the difference between us.
Tactus's voice thickens further.
Because if it had been my army, I would have killed your arrogant ass.
He turns more, and I see the hints of the ruin the bombs made of his face. You know what happens if you kill any of them. He nods to me, then to the Rage Knight, as if saying it'll either be one or the other that does him.
I'm not sorry I took Lysander, you know.
I don't think you're ever sorry for much.
Not sorry.
He chuckles, and dips a toe in the blood surrounding him.
But I think I shouldn't have done it. I was testing you at the Institute, but I wanted to see what you'd do. If you were worth following.
Was I?
You know that answer.
Am I still? He nods.
Always.
Saying it so pathetically that it feels like my heart has been pulled into my throat. He's a traitor, a liar, a cheat. Yet I see a friend. I want to fix him and make him whole. What am I doing? I have to put him down. But I've done that before with Titus. That cycle erodes us. Death begets death, and evermore. What if I let you live? I ask suddenly, drawing a confused, frantic glance from Tactus. Of course he doesn't understand forgiveness. What if I let you come back?
What?
What if I forgave you?
You're lying.
He turns more, and I see the full measure of what the bomb did to him. His nose is crooked, broken. The rest looks like a cherry stripped of its skin. My friend. I'm not lying. I did not put my faith in Tactus once, and I lost him. Now I will. I'll take the same leap I ask him to take. I step forward. I know there's good in you. I saw your face when those children were killed at the gala. You're not a monster. Come back to me. You would be one of my lieutenants again, Tactus. I would give you a legion to lead. When we take Mars, you'll carry one of my standards. But you can't wear that ugly armor.
It is uncomfortable.
He wheezes with a slight smile.
But Sevra, Roque, Victor,
they miss you. I lie. Drop your razor and come back to my army. I promise you will be safe. The razor dips in his hand. One of the children spares a smile at his younger siblings, a hopeful smile. Just leave the children alone, and all is forgiven. I mean it. Deep in my heart, I mean it. We all make mistakes, he says. We all make mistakes. Just come back. I won't hurt you. I drop my own razor. Neither will Arcos. I stare at Arcos till he nods his weathered head in complicity. I want to come home. Tactus murmurs quietly, pain in his voice. I want to come home. Then come home. Tactus's razor clatters to the floor, and he falls to a knee in front of me. He's rasping from pain. Relief floods the room. The children start crying again from the torturous shift from death to life. The caretakers hug their charges, tears making lines on their faces. I go forward to Tactus and motion him upward to clasp my arm. He wraps me in a frantic hug and sobs into me, body shaking, bloody features painting my armor. I'm sorry, he says a dozen times. He's weeping hard into my shoulder, clasping tight. His face is such a ruin. And I hug him. Exhaustion fills me. His sadness is like a weight that nearly drives me to tears. Yet I'm buoyed by the strange feelings of having him back, standing with me, gripping me. It's a humbling thing, knowing someone cannot live without you, knowing that though they've betrayed you, they wish for nothing but absolution. And as he clenches my back, I wrap my arms around his armor and try not to cry myself. Even the cruel feel pain. Even the cruel can change. I hope this changes him. He could do so much. If only he would learn. In so many ways, he is the embodiment of his race. And so if Tactus can change, gold can change. They must be broken, but then they must be given a chance. I think that's what Ea would have wanted in the end. When, at last, his sobs are done and we part, he stands at my side, loyal as a puppy, looking to me subtly for signs of affection. His hands tremble from the pain of his wounds, yet he watches in silence with Arcos and me as the children, high and low alike, file upward out of the hidden bunker with their caretakers. Pebble comes down to giddily tell us Roke is wrapping up the space engagement. Seeing Tactus's wounds, she pales. I tell her to fetch a yellow. Soon, Lorne, Tactus, and I are left alone in the basement. Lorne looks over to us. Now that the children are gone, consequences. His hands flash faster than a hummingbird's wings. An iron dagger appears, lurches forward 4 times into Tactus's armpit, where the armor is the weakest. I rush to stop Lorne, but it's already done. He twists like he's wringing a towel, severing the artery, an old man killing a young one. Tactus's ruined face wrenches with pain, and he gasps as though he knew justice would finally find him in the end. Lorne leaves, and I hold my friend as he dies, his eyes fading to some distant place, where perhaps he'll find that peace Roke always wished for him. Chapter 30 Gathering Storm How long till we reach the rendezvous? I ask Orion on the command deck. Except for our attendants, we are alone in front of the viewports of the Pax, watching my ships cross through space. The newest additions to our fledgling armada are painted white and carry Lorne's angry-faced purple griffin. With them fly the black and blue and silver warships captured from Kellen Albalona above Europa. Oranges and reds crawl over the exteriors of the metal monsters, mending the holes made by leechcraft and preparing them for the siege of Mars.
3 days till Hildar Station. The other ships will have beaten us there, Dominus.
Kavax and Daxo approach from behind. I turn to them and gesture out the repaired windows to the 10 ships of Kellen Albalona.
Thank you for the presents, I say. Your plan, your spoils,
Kavax declares.
With us taking a percentage, naturally,
Daxo adds, smooth as ever, raising his swirling golden eyebrows.
50% finder's fee.
I glance at him with amusement.
Well, 30%, because Pax liked you.
10%,
Kavax booms. I cock my head.
You're a poor negotiator, Preta.
He shrugs amiably and points in joy to jellybeans on the ground. He tosses Sophocles down, encouraging him to vanquish them all.
20.
Daxo splays his hands, movements always seeming to belong to a thinner, more bookish man.
That is fair, no? We lost 160 House Greys and 3 Obsidians.
Then 30% to compensate you.
For friends.
3 ships! What a haggle!
Kavax proclaims.
What a haggle! Sometimes a man needs a good haggle.
He claps me on the back, making the joints crack again.
If only we had caught Asha, that'd be a spoil to divide.
She fled into the sea, unfortunately.
A gesture to Ragnar, who stands at the edge of the bridge. Heard he did well. Pale and tall, he continues looking at me from behind his beard and runic tattoos, appearing as devoid of emotions as Kavax and Daxo are full of them.
The leader of his boarding party was killed. So were the lieutenants. Lots of heads smashed. They ran into some of Kellen's friends.
Kavax says dourly, as he rummages through his pockets for his impatient fox, who claws at his leg for more jelly beans.
I don't have any more, my little prince.
He smiles up at me hopefully.
Do you have any jelly beans?
No. Sorry.
Ragnar there took command. Did himself well,
Daxo says.
Took command? I ask.
Kavax explains.
There was a kill squad of Peerless. Half a dozen Bologna blade dancers, real noble boys, carved up all our golds and most of the obsidians. The Stained there collected the surviving Greys and a few obsidians, and managed to get the ship.
Any of these blade dancers survive?
No.
Ragnar looks at the ground again, as if expecting a reprimand.
Well done, my goodman,
I say instead. Both Kavax and Daxo squint at the familiarity.
Worth it to see Ragnar surprise me with a smile. A broad, yellow-toothed grin.
Do you think he could do more? I ask. Daxo hesitates.
What do you mean?
Could he lead absent a gold?
Daxo and Kavax share a worried glance.
What would be the benefit in that?
Daxo asks. I could send him places I could not send golds.
There is no such place.
Kavax crosses his arms. I go too far. I smile to placate him.
Of course. Just a theory.
The mind wanders from time to time. I clap Kavax on the shoulder, and they depart together for their own ship.
You overstepped,
Orion says. I beg your pardon.
You have ears.
I look down, searching the pale blue tattoos on her dark skin, as if the math there holds the key to understanding her mind.
You're observant for a blue. Because I know how the world works outside my digital sink. Comes from working the docks, Dominus. When you're at the bottom, you have to notice everything.
Which docks? I ask.
Phobos. Father was a docker, born outside the sects. Died when I was small. A young girl has to be on her toes if she wants to grow big in the hive dock cities. It's the only way to beat the monsters.
It's not the only way, I say.
No,
she asks, surprised. You can always become a monster, too. Orion turns from the viewport to look up at me. Fierce intelligence burns behind her arctic eyes.
And there's the beauty of space. A billion paths to choose.
I'm spared from replying when the Comblue calls from the pit.
Dominus, we've an assault shuttle inbound. It's Virginia Au Augustus.
Chapter 31 Coup. Father's captured, she says to me as she storms down the ramp from her smoking ship. She's flanked by several obsidian bodyguards in battle-scarred armor. A dozen greys exit the shuttle behind them, Sun Hua from Luna at their head. They're all lurcher mercenaries, plain and dangerous, the jackal's hunters. Severo eyes them warily. Around us, hundreds of ripwings and a dozen storks sit parked in the bay, large enough a place to swallow all of Lycos's common and her townships. Oranges clamor about the craft, preparing maintenance checks before the eventual invasion of Mars. I greet Mustang with my own coterie. Lorne, Severo, the Howlers, Victra, and Ragnar. Roke did not respond to my summons. I want to rush forward to embrace Mustang, but she's in a rage. Spittle flying out of her mouth, dark circles ringing angry eyes. Exhaustion pulls at her face.
Pliny has begun a coup. He arrested my brother. My aunt is dead and her children murdered, along with 6 of our praetors. More than 20 of my father's bannermen have sworn new oaths of fealty, and we've lost control of the fleet.
I ask Mustang if she's injured.
Injured?
She sneers the word.
As if that could matter. They killed my men. We came upon the Academy in stealth. And as soon as I launched my leechcraft toward the space station and the training ships, a Bologna fleet emerged from behind an asteroid and destroyed every one of my leechcraft. 10,000 men. Dead. They didn't have to do it. They had enough guns on us that we could do nothing but surrender. It was merciless.
Sounds like Karnas, I guess. She nods.
And Pliny. They didn't lead the Bologna on a goose chase. They led them straight into my operation.
Why didn't Pliny just kill you? Severo asks.
A man like Pliny craves legitimacy,
Lorne says from my side, nodding in greeting to Mustang. If she thinks his presence here strange, she doesn't let on.
It's his nature. He came to you beforehand, didn't he?
Mustang shares a disgusted look with my mentor.
The pixie had me put under guard in my quarters as he took my captured fleet to Hildas. During the journey, he came to me and showed me the holo footage of my father's failed raid on Ganymede.
She shudders in anger.
And he said that though my house had fallen to ruin, he would not see my bloodline ended.
The sovereign and he had come to an arrangement. If he could provide her with peace, then she would provide him with position, legitimacy, and a prize of his choosing. So he batted his pretty lashes at me,
as my father's ships burned on the hollow, and said he would divorce his wife and allow me the honour of taking his hand in marriage.
I say nothing. The howlers rumbled discontentedly.
And your response?
Victor asks.
Mustang ignores her.
He said he always had his eye on me.
She reaches into a pocket, pulls something out, and drops it onto the floor.
So I took one of his.
Severo cackles with Harpy. Lorne makes a sound of disapproval, like he has any ground to stand on in matters of cruelty.
It is good to see you again, Rage Knight, Mustang says. I'm sorry you were drawn into this, but we need you now more than ever.
I'm beginning to see that.
Where's your brother?
I ask Mustang, looking up from the eye. Captured. There's more that should be said. She glances at the oranges and the greys in the hangar. In private.
Of course. We'll continue in the war room. I begin.
In due time, Darrow.
Grandfatherly concern spreads across Lorne's face as he turns to Mustang.
My lady, you've been through a trial. Perhaps you should find rest, and we could... The howlers and I back away from Lorne.
Rest! Mustang's voice rises. Why would I need rest?
My mistake, Lorne says politely.
Theodora, I call.
She slips forward.
Coffee, stims, and food in the war room. Enough for 10.
I remember the 2 telemanuses.
Make it 20.
She laughs, accidentally.
Yes, Dominus.
Theodora steps aside to call her staff. Mustang jerks her head at the ship.
Just going to let it sit there.
Chief!
I call to the orange in charge of the hangar deck. Grease stains his beard. He saunters up, wiping burly hands on his orange greasers.
Put that ship out the airlock.
It can be salvaged,
the orange says.
I look to Mustang. Did you escape, or did they let you escape?
I don't know. My brother was the one who saved me. His own ship was caught helping mine escape.
The jackal is full of surprises.
What if there's a bomb in it?
Severo asks, staring at the ship uncomfortably.
It won't be a bomb, I say.
Pliny wants me still, and he wants Darrow for the Sovereign. But more so, he wants your fleet, Darrow. When it didn't show up at Hildas, he must have realized that you'd been warned, or that you were waiting for a code confirmation that he didn't know.
And he figured if anyone would know where I was, it'd be you.
So tracking me is how we will find this fleet,
Mustang says. Lorne looks back and forth at us.
When did you two discuss this?
Just now, Mustang says, confused at the question.
Severo claps Lorne on the shoulder.
Don't worry, you're not senile. They're just odd.
Lorne stares at Severo's dirty hand. The fingerless glove is covered with mashed potatoes and brown gravy. Severo's broad smile fades, and he sheepishly withdraws his hand.
I turn back to the orange.
Put it out the airlock, fast-like.
He seems hesitant, keeps rolling onto the balls of his feet.
Unless you've a better idea.
He scratches his head, looking worriedly with all the gold faces staring at him. The deckhands watch the exchange furtively.
Out with it! Severo barks.
Sure. Well, I could put it out the lock, Dominus. Or, I mean, I could find the scanners and the radiated material, if they went that route. We got some clever nuts and bolts here. Could find them out, and I could put them all in a long-range scout, no problem. Might do nice to let Pliny's hounds go barking in the wrong direction, yeah?
What is your name and world?
I ask.
Dominus
He blinks heavily. Scyther's my name. Luna. Three girls. Wife works in the Center for Automotive Development. So we have... I cut him off. Do this right, and we'll bring them to Mars and put them up on the Citadel staff, Scyther. You have 10 minutes.
Yes, sir.
He wheels to his men excitedly. I lead Mustang and my coterie to the lifts. Clenny said he killed you. She whispers as we walk. Aja and a Bologna fleet waited for us, like we thought they would. I grin sideways at her, then pull up my data pad. Orion, take command of the fleet. I want us far from this sector before we have more company. Severo, summon the Telemanosus. I want them in the... Severo? I look around for him. He's loitering around Pliny's eyeball some 20 meters back. We turn to look at him, and he shuffles his feet awkwardly.
Can I...
He gestures to it.
What?
Mustang asks.
Can I have it?
Mustang squints at him.
All yours.
He scoops up the eyeball and jams it into his pocket, grinning merrily. He runs to catch up.
Collecting the set, hopefully.
Chapter 32. Die Young. Mustang insisted on seeing Tactus before the meeting. Theodora guides us. We find Roke sitting by his body in the ship's medbay. The way he sits with his hands clasped together, you'd think Tactus might still have a chance at life. Perhaps in some other world, where men like Lorn don't exist.
He's been here since Europa, Theodora says quietly.
You didn't tell me he was down here, I say.
He asked me not to.
You're my servant, Theodora.
And he's your friend, Dominus.
Mustang nudges me.
Stop being an ass. Can't you see she's as exhausted as he is?
I look at Theodora. Mustang's right. You should get some sleep, Theodora.
A prime idea, I think, Dominus. Always lovely to see you, Domina.
Theodora says to Mustang, before shooting me a cross look. Master has been rather moody in your absence. Mustang watches Theodora glide out.
You were lucky with her.
She gently touches Rogue's shoulder. His eyes flutter open.
Virginia.
They grew close in the year we all spent in the Citadel together. Neither could ever get me to join them at the opera. It's not that I wasn't interested in the music. Lorne simply demanded time. She squeezes his hand.
How are you?
Better than Tactus. He glances at me. I wager he'd say more if I weren't here. He sees Mustang's state of disarray, brow creasing in worry.
What went wrong?
Once we tell him, he gently runs a hand through his wavy hair.
Well, that is bad.
I never thought Pliny would ever be so thoroughly bold. We're meeting in 10 to discuss plans, I say.
Roke ignores me. I'm sorry about your father and brother, Virginia.
They're still alive, I hope.
She looks to Tactus, and her face quiets.
I'm sorry about Tactus.
He went as he lived, Roke says. Only wish he could have lived longer.
You think he would have changed? Mustang asks.
He was always our friend, Roke says. It was our responsibility to help him try, even if it was like hugging a flame. He looks at me momentarily. You know I didn't want him to die, I say.
I wanted him to come back with us. Just as you wanted to catch Aja, Rogue says, snorting at my expression. I told you why I did that. Naturally. She kills our friend. She kills Quinn. But we let her walk away for the grander scheme. Everything costs something, Dara. Perhaps you'll soon tire of making your friends pay. That's not fair, Mustang says quickly. You know it's not. What I know is we're running out of friends, Roke replies. Not all of us are as tough as the Reaper. Not all of us want to be warriors. Of course, Roke thinks this life is a choice of mine. His own childhood was one of leisure and reading, spent going back and forth between his family estate in New Thebes and the highlands of Mars. His parents didn't believe in enhanced learning uploads, so they hired violets and whites to teach him pedagogically, walking and talking in peaceful pastures and beside still lakes. Tactus didn't sell the violin, Roke says after a moment. The one Darrow gave him? Yes. The Stradivarian. He sold it, then felt so guilty he didn't let the sale finalize with the auction house, made them cancel the order. He was practicing in private, shaking off some of the rust. Said he wanted to surprise you with a sonata, Darrow. The heaviness in me deepens. Tactus was always my friend. He just got lost in trying to be the man his family wanted him to be, when all along his friends loved the man he already was. Mustang puts a hand on my lower back, knowing what I'm thinking. Roke leans down now to kiss Tactus once on the cheek and to give him a benediction. Better to go into that other world in the full glory of some passion than to fade and wither with age. Live fast, die young, my wayward friend. Roke walks away, leaving Mustang and me alone with Tactus. You have to fix that, she says of Roke. Fix it before you've lost him. I know, I say. Soon as I fix 100 other things. We sit in the war room in full council, around a grand wooden table. Coffee cups and trays of food litter it. Mustang sits at my side, boots up on the table as ever, while she explains what went wrong with her father's mission. Kavax leans forward precariously in his seat, terrified at the idea of Augustus suffering defeat. He wrings his hands nervously, so distressed that Daxo takes Sophocles from his lap and hands him to an uncomfortable victor. Mustang's voice fills the room, and the hollow Pliny gave her comes to life above the table. A brigade of corvettes rockets silently through space toward the famed shipyards of Ganymede that ring the industrial moon of mottled green, blue, and swirling white. He dispatched a lurcher squad of greys concealed in the belly of two tankers. They disabled three of the defensive platform's nuclear reactors. Then my father came in hard with his ripwings and corvettes, as is his way, burning engines and dropping munitions before curling back around. It was a treasure trove, some 17 destroyers and 4 dreadnoughts in dry dock, most near or at completion. Supposing the ships to be manned by skeleton crews, he boarded them simultaneously. He even commanded the leechcraft that boarded the Moonbreaker with his 2 stained. But the ships were not manned by skeleton crews. There were no crews at all. Instead, they were loaded with Praetorians, grey lurcher squads, and Olympic knights.
And he surrendered?
Kavax asks in panic. Mustang laughs. My father? He nearly cut his way free. He killed the Hearth Knight, then he ran into some of our old friends.
The hollow shows Augustus flowing through 12 greys, like a man wading through stalks of high, dry grass. His razor sings and shrieks, sparking against the walls, sliding through men and armour, till he meets another man in armour, the shade of flame. The Hearth Knight. There's a flurry of tight lunges, and then red mist. A head thumps to the ground. Then two men appear, one in a sun-crested helm, the other, Fichtner, in his wolf-head helm. Together the men kill the Stained and put Augustus bleeding on the ground. Lorne looks over at me.
Lady. Mustang. Who was the man in the sun-crested armour?
She's silent.
That's the armour of the Morning Knight, I answer. Cassius. They must have mended his arm, or given him a new one.
Mustang continues. Julii's ships were also there. She looks at Victra. They finished my father's forces off. Severo glares at Victra, taking Sophocles from her as though she couldn't even be trusted with the fox.
Do you feel awkward? You should.
We've been over this, Victra says, sounding quite bored with the accusations. My mother was threatened by the sovereign. She's not political. She cares about money and little else.
So she doesn't care about loyalty? Mustang asks. Interesting.
Pfah! Agrippina's a wicked bitch, Kavix grumbles. Always has been.
Careful, large one, Victra warns. She's still my mother.
Kavix crosses his burly arms.
Apologies. That she is your mother.
And how do we know you're not in collusion with them, Victra?
Daxo asks softly.
Perhaps you spy. Perhaps you wait. How do you trust her loyalty, Darrow?
She could easily have sent word.
Mustang looks at me.
I was wondering that myself.
Why do I trust you, Daxo? Are you Kavix? I ask. Either of you would be in prime shape. Earn pardons, earn more territories and monies if you delivered my head to the sovereign.
And your heart to Cassius's mother,
Severo reminds me.
Thank you, Severo.
Here to help.
He grabs a drumstick off the table's spread and feeds it to Sophocles. Considering, he takes a bite himself, saying something quietly to the fox.
I trust Victra for the same reason I trust any of you.
Friendship, I say, managing to look away from Severo.
Friendship? Ha!
Mustang sets her coffee cup down loudly.
I'll be blunt. I don't trust a Julii farther than I could throw one.
That's because you're intimidated by me, little girl.
Mustang sits up straighter.
Little? I have a decade on you, darling. One day you'll look back at yourself and laugh. Was I really so foolish, so simple? Additionally, you're not very tall, so I'll call you little.
I don't catfight, Mustang says coldly. I don't trust you because I don't know you. All I know is your mother's reputation is not apolitical. She's a schemer, a briber. My father knew it, I know it, you know it.
Yes, to a degree, my mother is a schemer, and so am I, and so are you. But if there's one thing I am not, it is a liar. I've never told a lie, and I never will, unlike some people.
The arch of eyebrows makes it quite clear what she means.
Bad apples spawn bad seeds, Darrow,
Daxa warns.
Put your feelings aside on this one. She was raised by a dangerous woman. There's no need to mistreat her, but we can't have her in this council. I would encourage you to place her in quarters till this is over.
Yes!
Kavix raps the table with his knotted knuckles.
Agreed! Bad seeds!
I can't believe you lured me into this mess, Darrow.
Lorne mutters. He looks out of place here. Too old, too grey to be party to squabbling. Can't even trust your own counsel.
Crumpy? Low blood sugar, perhaps?
Severo tosses him the half-gnawed drumstick. Lorne lets it flop against the table, unimpressed by the display.
Wayward hair your wisdom, Arcos,
Kavak says respectfully.
I would listen to your counselors, Darrow.
Lorne pops his knotted fingers.
I've got scars older than them, but they aren't completely naive. Better safe than sorry. Confine Victra to our quarters.
You don't even know me, Arcos,
Victra protests, finally pulled out of her chair. You see the warrior in her now, flaring just beneath the cultured calm.
This is an affront to me. I was fighting with Darrow when you were still cowering in your floating castle, pretending it's A.D. 1200.
Time does not prove one's loyalty.
Lorne scoffs and runs a finger along a scar on his forearm.
Scars do.
You took those fighting for the Sovereign. You were her sword. How much blood did you draw for her? How many men did you watch burn at the side of the Ash Lord?
Do not speak of Rhea to me, girl.
Victra's teeth glimmer in a cruel smile.
So there is a rage night beneath the wrinkles and moth-bitten rags.
Lorne surveys her, seeing the wrathfulness of youth in her, and he looks to me, as if to wonder just what sort of man brings golds like Tactus and Victra to his side.
Does he even know me? His eyes ask.
No, he's realizing. Of course not.
Honor in the first, honor in the last. Those are my family words, whereas you, young lady, well, the name Julii does not exactly lift one to nobler purpose, does it? You're just traitors.
My name has nothing to do with who I am.
Snakes beget snakes,
Lorne replies, not even looking at her now.
Your mother was a snake. She begat you, ergo you are a snake. And what do snakes do, my dear? They slither, they wait, cold-blooded, cruel in the grass, and then they bite.
We could ransom her,
Severo says.
Threaten to kill her, unless Agrippina joins us, or at least stops pissing all over our plans.
You're a sinister little shit, aren't you?
Victor asks.
I'm gold, bitch! What do you expect? Warm milk and cookies just because I'm pocket-sized?
Roke clears his throat, drawing eyes. It seems we are being unfair. Hypocritical, even, he observes. All here know my family is full of politicians. Some of you might even think I come from noble blood and noble seed. But we, Fabii, are a dishonest breed. Mother's a senator who lines her pockets with agricultural funds and low-colour medical subsidies, so she can live in more homes than her mother did. My paternal grandfather poisoned his own nephew over a violet starlet a quarter his age, who ended up stabbing him and blinding herself when she discovered he killed the nephew, her lover. But that's nothing next to my great-great-uncle, who fed servants to lampreys because he read Emperor Tiberius pioneered the strange passion. Yet here I am, spawn of all that sin, and I wager no one here questions my loyalty. Why, then, do we doubt Victress? She has remained steadfast to Darrow since the Academy. None of you were there. None of you know anything about it, so I insist you shut your mouths. Even when our mother demanded she abandon Darrow and Augustus, she stayed. Even when the Praetorians came to kill us on Luna, she stayed. Now she is here, when we are little more than a ragtag coalition of bandits, and you question her.
You disgust me.
It makes me sad to be among you bickerers.
So if another man or woman questions her loyalty, I will lose faith in this fellowship,
and I will leave. Victor's smile for him is like a sunrise.